When I was 12, I had a small blue bicycle. I had ridden it everywhere for 2 years. To school, to the park, to my friend Daniel's house at the other end of the street, to the corner shop, to the back of the wood near the railway line, where my friends and I had a kind of camp made of an old plastic sheet and 4 bricks. The bicycle was, although I would not have used the word at the time, a kind of extension of me. I had cleaned the wheels myself. I had stuck a small green sticker on the frame near the handlebars, where it had begun to peel slightly at one corner. I knew the bicycle the way one knows something one uses every day, in 1,000 small, unrecorded ways. One Sunday afternoon in July, I went into the back garden to get my bicycle. The plan was to meet Daniel and another boy, Sam, at the park, where we were going to spend the afternoon doing whatever 12-year-olds spent Sunday afternoons doing in 1991, which I now do not entirely remember, but which probably involved riding round the bandstand and complaining about the inadequacy of the older boy's attitude towards us. As I lifted the bicycle, the chain fell off. It hung loose against the back wheel, black with oil and slightly stiff. I tried to put it back myself, with the kind of confident incompetence one has at 12, and after a minute or so my hands were also black, and the chain was no closer to being fixed. I went into the house. My father was at the kitchen table, drinking what was probably his second coffee of the morning and reading the Sunday paper. He was, like most of our Sunday afternoons, in a slightly slow mood. Not exactly tired, just unhurried, the way one tends to be on Sundays when there is nothing in particular to be done. "Dad," I said, "the chain came off my bicycle. Can you fix it?" He looked up from the paper. He looked at my hands. "Of course," he said. "Let's have a look." It is worth saying something about my father at this point in the story, before we go outside. He was a quiet man, an accountant by profession, who liked walking on the weekends, listening to the radio, and doing the crossword. He was not, I should say, the kind of father who built things in the garden or fixed the family car at the weekend. We did not own many tools, beyond the basic set in a small wooden box under the sink, and most of those tools were used only occasionally and somewhat tentatively. But on Sunday afternoons, when small things needed to be done, my father was the person who often did them. He was, in his own quiet, slightly inexpert way, willing. And that willingness is the part of him I find myself thinking about most, now that he is older and I am no longer 12. We went outside. He turned the bicycle upside down on the grass. A move that surprised me, because I would not have known to do this myself, and which I therefore took at the time as evidence that he knew what he was doing. He looked at the chain. He pulled it. He stretched it. He tried to put it back over the small ring near the pedals. It slipped off. He tried again. It slipped off again. He turned the chain over and tried again, with a small frown of concentration. It still slipped off. After about a quarter of an hour, my father sat back on the grass, slowly, and looked at the bicycle. His hands were black with oil. There was a small mark of oil on his cheek where he had wiped a hand, without knowing he was doing it. He looked tired in a way I had not quite seen before. Not physically tired, but a more particular kind of tired. The tiredness of a person who has been making small, unsuccessful efforts for a quarter of an hour. Then he said something I had never heard him say in 12 years of being his child. He said, "I don't actually know how to do this." I looked at him. He was sitting on the grass, with oil on his hands and a small mark of oil on his cheek, looking at the bicycle. He did not look angry, in the way that adults sometimes look, when something has refused to cooperate with them. He did not look ashamed. He looked, more than anything, simply honest. He had tried, for as long as he could think of anything to try, and he had reached the point at which he was no longer pretending, to the bicycle, to me, or to himself, that he knew what he was doing. I felt several things at once, although I could not have separated them at the time. There was a small disappointment, although it was a smaller disappointment than I might have expected. My father had always known the answers to my questions, and I had been quietly waiting, while he tried, for him to fix the chain. There was something like protectiveness. I had a small impulse to say, in a generous voice, that it was okay, that it didn't matter, although I did not say it, partly because I was 12 and not very good at saying things like that, and partly because some part of me sensed that he did not need me to say it. And there was something else, which I could not have named at the time, but which I now think was the small first taste of seeing my father as a person, as someone who, like me, was sometimes simply at the end of what he knew how to do. It was at that moment, or perhaps a few seconds after it, that our neighbour, Mir Patel, came over to the fence between our gardens. Mr. Patel was a tall, cheerful man who had three children, all of whom rode bicycles, and who had, in addition to whatever else he had done in his life, almost certainly fixed several hundred chains. He looked over the fence, saw the situation, and said, in his usual cheerful way, "Bicycle problem." "A bit," my father said. He stood up, slowly, and brushed the grass off his trousers. "I've been trying for about a quarter of an hour." He said this without embarrassment, which I noticed, and which I now think was a small kindness he was doing to me, letting me see that admitting he could not do something was not, in itself, a thing to be ashamed of. Mr. Patel came round through the side gate. He took the chain in his hands, examined it briefly, turned it the right way round. Apparently, it had been the wrong way round throughout my father's quarter of an hour, and put it over the small ring near the pedals, and then over the smaller ring at the back wheel, in a single fluid sequence of movements that took perhaps 3 minutes. He showed me, briefly, how to do it. My father watched and listened, and at the end said thank you, in a voice that contained, I think, both gratitude and a small amount of relieved amusement at himself. I rode my bicycle to the park. I was about a quarter of an hour late, but Daniel and Sam were still there, and we played until the sun went down, and I do not, to be honest, remember anything about the afternoon at the park. What I remember is my father on the grass, with black hands and a small mark of oil on his cheek, looking at the bicycle and saying that he did not know how to do it. It was the first time I had ever heard him say, in those plain words, that he did not know something. And it was the first time I noticed, although the noticing took years to fully complete, that he was a person. I have thought about that afternoon many times in the 30-odd years since. I do not think it was a sad moment, although there is a small sadness somewhere in it, of the kind that sits inside most coming-of-age moments. The small loss that comes with seeing more clearly. What was being lost was a particular fantasy, the kind that small children carry around about their parents. That the parent has been given a special book of answers, into which they look quietly when the child is not in the room. What was being gained, instead, was a different relationship. The slow, gradual relationship between two people who do not have a special book, who are working things out as they go, and who happen, by chance, to be father and son. After that day, I asked my father different kinds of questions, although it took me years to notice I was doing it. I asked him questions he might know, but I also told him things he might not have heard before. We became, in a quiet way, slightly more equal. And the fact that this small shift began on a Sunday afternoon in July, in our garden, with a black chain on the grass and a small mark of oil on my father's cheek, is one of the small specific facts about my life that I find I am, on reflection, very glad to have been there for.